PPI.org.
Fluoride. Time for the Northern Sun Radio News Show with your host, Don Olson. And before you say, uh-oh, what's he doing here? I want to talk about my own situation, why I came to it. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, HD Minneapolis, and on the web at kfai.org. Radio Without Boundaries. Been avoiding fluoride for a while. And then my dentist, who thought was, you know, progressive, they don't use mercury in their amalgams and any of that stuff. So they thought, well, give some fluoride kind of a soak for my teeth. I thought, well, maybe that wouldn't be so bad. And then they went to a varnish, a fluoride varnish. I thought, well, that must be pretty long-lasting or just there forever. Well, I didn't wake up to it for a long time, but I started having some problems. I had some inflammation of the joints a couple years ago, and tried to deal with it, went to a rheumatologist, and I read one thing about taking certain mushrooms. Yeah, I read an article in Herb Quarterly, and they talked about the anti-inflammatory capabilities of shiitake and maitake. Well, I started taking those every morning and dinner when I was cooking, and I got some better. And then I snapped to the idea after I read this article in the Townsend Letter for doctors and their patients. There could be some problems with fluoride dosages. And I came to figure out that I bet this varnish would wear off because they wanted to do it again in every 3 months. And so then all that fluoride, which, you know, here I thought, oh no, I'm not getting much. So I stopped it, didn't do it the last time. And of course, my teeth cleaner was sort of amazed that I wouldn't be doing it. I talked a little bit about it, but I've been feeling much better about all this. And so it's a, now I've, and then I ran into Leo Cashman, who I've known. He used to be involved with co-op things together back in the 70s. He was around Seward Co-op, but he's been deep into dental issues. So I'm going to read to some things, which I really kind of set me off in the April issue of the Atlantic Magazine. And it was kind of surprising. The article, the cover line was, "The Bad Science Behind Water Fluoridation," by Charles C. Mann. Is that Charles C. Mann? I know that name. And he, well, he's a contributing writer to The Atlantic, but his books include 1491, a well-regarded history of what North America was like the year before Columbus came. So I thought I would get a copy of that. And I had to have people from Next Chapter Books send me a copy of it. And then in the article, they start off with, "Opposition to water fluoridation, while often vocal, has been largely a fringe crusade, but solid evidence for fluoridation's value is surprisingly hard to find." Well, that was pretty interesting. That here he's going to do the study of it. So what does he do? He goes through, examines some of the people who have gone through the literature. And there was one graph that portrayed there that was put out by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And it tracked the number of missing, decayed, or filled adult teeth in 12-year-olds, a measure of overall dental health. And the Center for Disease Control and Prevention called fluoridation one of the top 10 health advances of the 20th century. That's because the graph for these six countries with fluoridated water went down. How many bad teeth they had, how many problems. And that includes Australia, Chile, Ireland, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States. But then there was the graft of the countries without fluoridated water. And the same general downward trend from 75 to the year 2014. And Charles Mann talks about the difference between the two graphs don't leap out at the viewer. Non-fluoridated nations such as Belgium, Luxembourg, and Denmark actually have better dental health by this measure than the United States, one of the world's fluoridation champions. Finland, Germany, Japan, the Netherlands, Sweden, and Switzerland tried fluoridation, abandoned it years later, and saw no rise in tooth decay. And he asks, what's going on? Well, now I'd like to bring in Leo Cashman. He's deep into dental issues. In fact, he's a publisher of a publication called Dental Truth. And I ran into Leo when I was thinking about all these things. And I said, well, maybe we could have you on my show, because I've known him for all these years. And here we are today. Welcome to Northern Sun News, Leo Cashman.
Thank you, Don. I'm happy to be on your show. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about fluoride, and it's a rare thing to be able to speak the truth about an issue like fluoride, because we generally get a lot of propaganda from the media, and you know, I will say right now I am quite an expert on fluoride. I've been following the issue and writing on the issue and researching the issue for about 23 years. And the science is overwhelming that fluoride is quite poisonous, and the less we are exposed to this poison, the better. I think water fluoridation is a scam, and the use of fluoride in dentistry is a very bad thing, a very bad idea. And it sounds like you were one of the unfortunate victims of that very bad idea. And so, you know, I encourage you to throw in questions and as I go along, but I have a lot of things I can explain about fluoride and slow me down or question me whenever you want to.
how did fluoride come about to be put into our water? It hasn't been actually, it hasn't been forever.
No, it really got going in the early 1940s. And I'll explain the history of it, the secret history of it. Fluoride is, must say, just in terms of the science, is very toxic to just about every form of life, whether it's plant or animal. And in the 1930s, it was mainly used as a rat poison and insecticide, cockroach poison, and it worked fabulously. It was a very, very, it is very, very poisonous, and so you definitely wanted to be careful to keep your kids away from that fluoride rat poison, because, you know, it will be poison your children. And even today, on a tube of fluoridated toothpaste, there's supposed to be a poison control warning. If your child swallows more than a pea-sized amount of this toothpaste, call the nearest poison control warning, control center. But they don't explain very well that the reason for the warning is because you have a tube of fluoridated toothpaste, and if your toothpaste is not fluoridated, then you don't need to have those same worries. It is very, very poisonous. That is something that people don't understand. They know it's the active ingredient in toothpaste that have fluoride, and it kills germs. Well, it's very poisonous, and you absorb some of that fluoride through your oral mucosa, and it is extremely detrimental to our bones and our connective tissue, our thyroid, and our nervous system, just to name a few things. Now, what happened historically in the early 1940s is that they were secretly working on the development of the atomic bomb. It was called the Manhattan Project, and there was a factory in New Jersey, a DuPont factory that was producing fluoride in large amounts, and they had an accident, and they released a large amount of fluoride into the atmosphere, and it rained and brought the fluoride down into the fields, and the crops were poisoned. The animals eating their food, they were poisoned. People who ate the strawberries or the peaches would be vomiting all night long. They didn't know what was going on, and finally they figured out that there had been a fluoride accident at the DuPont plant. This is in Deepwater, New Jersey. Well, they needed the fluoride for the uranium isotope separation in the atomic bomb project, and secretly, they had meetings and said, look, we got to cover this up. We don't want the public to demand shutdown of this factory with all of its fluoride production, and we don't want to interfere with the progress of preparing for the atomic bomb to use against, as it turned out, was used against Japan in the terrible bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in August of 1945. So they had secret meetings of DuPont people and USDA officials. USDA, Department of Agriculture, had been planning to embargo the crops to protect the public. And there were bomb project scientists like Harold Hodge. In a secret meeting, they all decided to cover it up. Do not embargo the crops. Don't worry about protecting the public health. And we'll cover everything up. And we will put out a myth that a little bit of fluoride is good for children's teeth. So that was suggested in a memo from the Manhattan Project's scientist Harold Hodge. It was fraudulent from the beginning. This entire thing was a myth. It went around New Jersey and to allay concerns about fluoride poisoning, and then they started spreading that myth around other parts of the country, and this gave rise to fluoridation, which had been proposed earlier by people associated with the aluminum industry and the sugar industry to deflect attention from the fact that fluoride is a major pollutant from the aluminum industry and other heavy industry like steel. And also the sugar industry wanted to deflect attention from the fact that it's sugar that is the prime culprit in causing tooth decay. And so the new myth was, well, it's a lack of fluoride. We need more fluoride for those children. Don't you care about children? We need fluoride to prevent tooth decay in our children. So they knew it was a myth, and it allowed the bomb project to go forward. I think the best source of all the details on this is a book called The Fluoride Deception by Christopher Bryson. And he was an investigative journalist who uncovered all this after 50 years of this information being classified as a military secret. It was declassified in 1997. He learned about it, and his co-journalist learned about it. They could not get their expose into the Christian Science Monitor, which originally had planned to publish it, or any other major newspaper in the United States or in Canada. So this is a heavily censored expose on the real history behind water fluoridation and how it came about, and how the scientist Harold Hodge lied to the American public about the safety of water fluoridation and the benefits of water fluoridation. So ever since its beginning in the early 1940s, water fluoridation was a scam, and there was a cover-up of the truth about fluoride, and the cover-up, unfortunately, is still continuing in America, where 70% of the population is now drinking fluoridated water, much to their detriment. It is a harmful cumulative poison, and it is very harmful. But there are people profiting from this scam, and in particular, there is a Minnesota company called Mosaic, which is based in Plymouth, a suburb of Minneapolis, and Mosaic owns most of the phosphate fertilizer plants in the United States. They're mostly down in Florida, and those fertilizer plants mine the fertilizer, phosphate material used for making phosphate fertilizer. It's naturally heavy in fluoride. They have to capture the acidic fluoride pollution coming from the plant in their pollution control equipment and keep it out of the environment, because it's very devastating to the environment, to livestock, to farms, and so on. And what they do with their pollution is they sell it to chemical companies that sell it to our waterworks, which then put it in our drinking water in the scam that claims that it's going to be good for little children's teeth. So they are using a product that is a mix of toxic pollutants that is heavy and high in fluoride content, very acidic, corrosive fluoride compounds, and other junk like aluminum, arsenic, some radioactive elements. The whole brew is being put into your water supply, whether you're in Minneapolis or St. Paul or any other town in Minnesota, It's mandatory, and it is put in at the end of the water purification process so that the last thing that's dumped in there is the pollution from phosphate fertilizer plants. Now, Don, I don't know how anyone can call that anything else but a scam.
Leo Cashman, so it has nothing, you're saying, to do with making the water purified for drink. It's only...
No, they put it in at the end, and they put in a little bit of alum near the end, and then the last thing is the pollution that they add. And so their filtration of the water that they do earlier in the purification process cannot filter out the junk that has been added at the end of the process. How do I know this? I know this is the way the process is because the city of Minneapolis has sent me a list of steps that they use in the water purification process. And I know that this addition of the pollution is done right at the end of the process. Friends, that's a scam. That's a scam. Now, you know, Minneapolis might say, well, we have to do it because state statute that was passed in about 1970 tells us we must do it, forces us to do it. Well, you know, I think our city councils should pass a resolution saying we don't want to add pollution to our drinking water, and we're not going to do it anymore, and this is a reprehensible thing for the state law to mandate, and it was passed under false testimony provided by, mainly by a professor at the University of Minnesota named Wallace Armstrong, and he was a big fraud too, just the way Harold Hodge was a fraud. He was lying about the safety and the benefits of water fluoridation, and yet when people at the legislature hear testimony from somebody who is a chemist from the University of Minnesota, they tend to believe that testimony uncritically, and they don't look at the science, and they don't listen to the critics that can tell them the truth about the issue.
It's let me go back to this article and read a couple more things from there. This is the one by Charles Mann that's in the April.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with the graphs you were talking about, and I think that's important data that shows that they were cherry picking the data when they said, look, here's cause and effect. If you fluoridate the water, the rate of tooth decay goes down. They're cherry-picking the data because if you take data from other countries that don't fluoridate, the improvement over time in tooth decay is as good or better. And so they're defrauding their readers when they put out that kind of misleading information, cherry-picking the data.
I'd like to read the countries that don't fluoridate their water. Austria, Belgium, Czech Republic, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Iceland, Italy, Japan, Luxembourg, Mexico, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Slovak Republic, Slovenia, Sweden, and Switzerland.
Well, let me give you a perspective on it. We had a crooked scientist in America named Harold Hodge, and he was a smart scientist. He knew the truth, and he lied about it. Now, the leading scientist in Europe was in Denmark, and he was an honest scientist. His name is Kaj Roholm, R-O-H-O-L-M, and he published the truth about fluoride. He deeply investigated fluoride poisoning at cryolite plants, processing plant in Copenhagen back in the, I guess, late 1930s, early 1940s. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, these workers are having devastating health impacts from handling this fluoride compound called cryolite that was used industrial as a pesticide, killing insects and so on. And you know what, Don? It's still being used in parts of the United States, particularly in California. And so you end up with cryolite contamination in the grapes and in the raisins and other crops where it's used. If you're eating commercially grown, not organic, but commercial grapes and raisins. So we still don't have honest science informing us about the hazards of fluoride in the food, and it's a very, very serious problem in the food. But to go back to Europe, because Europe was informed by an honest scientist, the Danish scientist that I mentioned, most of Europe never did fluoridate, and the parts of Europe that did fluoride, the continental Europe, they have repealed it. So there's no place in continental Europe that fluoridates anymore. And it's odd, you know, Ireland is 60% fluoridated, roughly, and they get their pollution, their fluoride pollution product from the Netherlands, but the Netherlands itself does not fluoridate. So you have some very strange differences going on between Ireland and continental Europe. And how on the earth did Ireland and part of England get fluoridated and a large part of Australia? The answer, Don, is United States government money went to promote water fluoridation in Ireland and England and Australia. And why did the United States government spend money to promote it? Because they did not want the United States to be the only English-speaking country that was doing the dumb thing of fluoridating its water. So that's, I think, the obvious conclusion. But I can guarantee you, Don, the U.S. government was the main reason why Ireland is heavily fluoridated, and so they spent money to put their propaganda out in Ireland. But there is quite a movement in Ireland to repeal water fluoridation. But just like in the United States, you're up against big money, big propaganda, and unfortunately the media is part of that propaganda. So it's fascinating background. And let me know if that made sense to you, Don, if that was clear.
Yeah, it was very clear. And yeah. I think I'll bring in this part. Because you brought up Britain. So the National Health Service there decided they would do a study of fluoride tests. And in 1999, the government asked National Health Service to carry out an up-to-date expert scientific review of fluoride and health. A research team based at the University of York evaluated every study of fluoridation it could find, about 3,200 of them. The team's conclusion was, it said, surprising. Despite the long fight over fluoridation, few of the thousands of studies counted as, quote, high-quality research. And the one who was head of that review said, he was more blunt, there's hardly any evidence that fluoridation works, he told Newsweek magazine. And if anything, there may be some evidence the other way around. Well, these findings were, of course, ignored. And in 2015, the Cochrane Organization entered into the debate. And they had 30,000 medical researchers from around the world that provide systematic analysis of modern issues. And what they couldn't find measuring the confounding questions weren't dealt with. Namely, as you brought up, sugar consumption, social economic status, and so on, and how much of the improved dental health of the 60s and 70s was due to water fluoridation. So the article puts forward the idea, if you go to the dentist more often and you brush your teeth, well, maybe there's really no need for this fluoridation under any idea.
I agree, Don. And, you know, in every developed country over the last half century, there's been more and more awareness that we should eat less sugar. We should consume less sugar, less sweets, and for a lot of reasons. The tooth decay is one of them. Obesity is another. I mean, sugar really probably increases your risk of cancer, diabetes, obesity, a lot of bad things. And tooth decay is also on that list. So, and one of the parties behind water fluoridation has been the sugar industry. You'll see that in Chris Bryson's book, The Fluoride Deception. You know, there are a lot of powerful forces behind the fluoride cover-up, and the health impacts have become more and more well-established, and it is so ironic that tooth decay or dental fluorosis, which is a kind of damage to the teeth, is the clearest statistical result of water fluoridation. And if you've ever seen people with chalky white spots on the front of their teeth when they smile, that's fluoride damage. And that's not just a cosmetic problem. When that person has dental fluorosis, it involves the entire tooth, so it goes into the dentin, and it's not just the enamel. And when that's happening to the teeth, it's also happening to the bones. It's a sign of systemic damage, body-wide damage to that person's bones and connective tissue. The ligaments and cartilage are not as elastic as they should be. They're more subject to sports injuries or other injuries. The elderly are more prone to hip fractures. And so this is a very, very damaging poison that accumulates and harms our connective tissue and accelerates the aging process. So things like sagging skin that we associate with old age are promoted by fluoride. The thyroid gland is hard hit by fluoride because it competes with iodine, and we need iodine for proper thyroid function. So as you know, iodine is found in the actual thyroid hormone, both T4 and T3, and some people are deficient in iodine. It's an essential trace mineral, and fluoride makes that problem worse because it competes with iodine for uptake into the thyroid. So, you know, we have a lot of problems from fluoride It also is harmful to the kidneys, and it accumulates in the pineal gland, which is in the middle of the head, and that gland is important as a gland that produces melatonin, which is both a sleep hormone and a key hormone for making sure we have a good immune system that can fight off things from infection to cancer. So for the sake of good immunity, we should be avoiding fluoride in the toothpaste, in the drinking water, and any other source, and we should be eating organic food, because organic food is the best way to avoid fluoride and, of course, many other toxins in the food system. And I'm sure you, all the listeners know, there's a lot of Roundup in the food these days, a lot of glyphosate, and so we have many, many reasons to stay with organic food, and we have many reasons to stay with health-conscious dentists who are aware of the poisons that are still being taught in dental schools, and they avoid those poisons like fluoride and, of course, mercury.
Yes, Roundup. A year ago, I was visiting some relatives, farmers down in southern Minnesota, and their son just graduated from the University of Minnesota Agriculture School. And he, without my even bringing up the topic, started giving me a strong thing about Roundup being just fine, no problems. And this is, of course, just before some of these huge settlements were brought against the makers
Monsanto.
Of Roundup. Monsanto,
yeah.
Who was
right.
Bought by Bayer, and
yeah.
It's even bigger. But and so there's a lot of these forces which try to bring about these differences. Now, one thing I want to bring up was that this Cochrane report I referred to a few minutes back, a writer from the Harvard Public Health magazine used the Cochrane report to ask, quote, "Is fluoridated drinking water safe?" question mark. And boy, who came down on them? The American Dental Association, American Public Health Association, American Dental Education Association, and the American Association of Public Health Dentistry, the American Association for Dental Research, and the Harvard School of Dental Medicine all demanded that the article be amended or taken down.
Well,
so you've got a lot that you're going against. Right. In fact, how did you ever get into these issues?
Well, let me before we get into that, let me give you some background on ADA and how ADA, who is ADA and how do they influence dental schools? Because that's a very important point we're on. Here's the quick answer. In the mid 1880s. Some dentists started using mercury in dental fillings, and they were called silver fillings or amalgam fillings. But those fillings are about half mercury. Half mercury. Now, would you bring a product onto the market today that's half mercury? I don't think so. I don't think you'd dare to do that. But yes, it's half mercury, and it releases mercury, and it causes a lot of harmful health effects. And from the very beginning, the dentists were told by the Dental Society, don't use mercury, it's harming people severely. And there were a bunch of renegade dentists who refused to quit using the mercury, and they formed their own group, and that's what became the American Dental Association. So ADA was formed by renegade dentists who refused to quit using mercury. So is it surprising that they are the dentists who are ethically and scientifically so compromised that they will use poisons like mercury and fluoride in dentistry? No, they are very compromised. They're very rich. They're very powerful. And get this, Don, and you may not know this, I don't know, they are the ones that accredit every dental school in America. The ADA, which is not a governmental body, it's a professional group, private group, gets to accredit every dental school in America. That means they know they can accredit the school and say, look, you have to hire this person and not this other person to head the school. Here's what your curriculum has to be. You have to teach that dental mercury is fine, 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 and you have to teach that water fluoridation is wonderful, and so are all these other fluoride products like the fluoride varnish, the fluoride gel treatments that the little children get, and so on, and that we know are extremely hazardous to the patients. So that's where the corruption comes in. And then the ADA, by the way, the state chapter is part of the ADA. So it's called a Minnesota Dental Association. That's simply a chapter of the ADA. So, and they are, how do they influence the dental school education by accreditation? How do they influence state dental boards? Because they contribute to the governor's campaign committee a lot of money, and then they say, well, this is who we think you should appoint to the dental board, and they get a majority of their people on the dental board, and that dental board governs the practice of medicine in that state. So the dental boards are very powerful, and if you have a dentist who starts speaking out publicly against fluoride or against mercury, they can go in and harass that dentist and bring charges against that dentist, not based on science, but just based on their own standards of how they think dentistry should be practiced.
You know,
they have a very, very repressive system, and then, of course, they influence the state board, the departments of health, because the state departments of health are largely controlled by the CDC. And who is the CDC? They are the health police for the country. You know, this is what you should be doing to stay healthy. This is what you should do, and this is what you shouldn't do from a health point of view. And they are the big promoters of water fluoridation. And that's a very corrupt thing that the CDC is doing and has been doing for over half a century. And this is relevant because today everybody is looking to the CDC to know what to do for the pandemic. Oh, you have to shut down the economy. You have to not work. You can't go to church. You can't have meetings and so on. And so we need to give the CDC a little bit of scrutiny in terms of, are they compromised on some of the most important issues facing our society? And I think the answer is, well, there's a lot of evidence that they are strongly influenced by private interests such as Big Pharma and such as the water fluoridation interests. And that is, those are private industrial interests that are unduly influencing the CDC. So it's important to see all these connections. And when we hear the Minnesota Department of Health saying this is what we should do, realize they are heavily funded by the CDC. And the CDC is probably controlling the message.
Well, we have Leo Cashman, who is puts out a thing called Dental Truth, and there's an organization called DAMS, Dental Amalgam Mercury Solutions. My dentist doesn't use mercury. Here, I thought that fight had been won. It's more widespread than I know about. And why, mercury, why would they push to have that in there?
Yeah, well, you know, you're raising the really good points, Don. And I think that a lot of dentists really don't like the amalgam filling, and none of the cosmetic dentists like it. because these are metallic fillings that will stain the teeth. As they get older, they often fracture the teeth, so they're really not very good fillings. They don't bond to the tooth the way the white fillings do. And, of course, they're poisonous, so they, over time, tend to poison the patients. But the cosmetic dentists don't get the health dimension very well, so they will often offer to remove the amalgam fillings, but they don't do it safely enough, and they don't use the elaborate protections that are needed to remove those amalgam fillings without poisoning the patient. So we urge people to contact our organization and learn where the holistic dentists are in their area, in their town or city or region. And we provide that list of dentists and also informational articles on mercury in dentistry, how do you detoxify mercury, what are some of the issues with the crowns and the bridges, various dental materials, and, of course, the fluoride issue, and many other issues that crop up in dentistry. And we think that the holistic dentists who go out of their way to study the health issues that come to bear on dentistry are probably the best dentists to go to on an ongoing basis. And when you think about it, Don, shouldn't every dentist be extremely health conscious and eager to avoid toxic materials and toxic methods like a fluoride varnish or a fluoride gel treatment for the children? They should all be health conscious. And unfortunately, a lot of them are still in the shadow of misinformation that they got back in dental school. So the dentists themselves, I think, are not part of a cover-up. They're good and honorable people, and they mean well, but they are misinformed still often by what they were taught in dental school. And if they belong to the ADA, they get the ADA news every 2 weeks, and that continues to misinform them about these important issues. And often, it's sad to say this, but often these dentists who follow the ADA end up being mercury poisoned themselves, and their staff, their dental assistants, can end up being mercury poisoned because they are using amalgams, or even if they don't still use mercury amalgams, they are unfortunately removing the amalgam fillings not safely enough. And that can be extremely harmful to the dentists themselves. And so it is a tragic situation for the dentists who are being mercury poisoned.
So how you have a website?
Website is amalgam.org, and you spell that A-M-A-L-G-A-M .org. And the phone number to reach me is 651-644-4572.
To get back to the fluoride, I remember some years back up in the Brainerd, the county attorney for whatever the county it is, I think it's Crow Wing, did not allow it. And that was John Remington Graham. And he fought it off for a number of years, and I knew him back from graduate school. He was in law school; I was in graduate school. But we were in an anti-war group together that we formed over at the Mixers Bar, the Conservative and Liberal Americans Against the War in Vietnam. And he was quite active too in the defending draft resistors during the Vietnam War era.
Yeah. Yes. Right. I know who he is. And I'll comment on the legal battle that occurred. You know, Brainerd has very good drinking water naturally. They're very proud of their good water quality, and they did not want fluoridation to ruin the purity of their water. And so they strongly fought back, and this lawyer, Remington, fought it out in court over many years. And finally, the way I recall is the judge said, you know, you may be right on the science. It may be a bad idea scientifically, but I don't care. I'm going to rule that the state has the power to force Brainerd to fluoridate anyway. So it was kind of like, hey, you know, science be damned. They passed their law, and it tells you to fluoridate, and, you know, so you better fluoridate. And unfortunately, you know, that is the attitude in the court system sometime. You know, constitutional rights to privacy and personal freedom, be damned. I don't care about the Constitution. I don't care about your health. They have the power to do this, and I'm going to side with that power to do this. And I've seen this again and again in litigation involving fluoride. And so, you know, unfortunately, our system of justice does not honor personal privacy and personal choice regarding health issues. And so, you know, it's a sad reflection on our system of justice. But along those lines, Don, let me mention that there is another trial coming up over water fluoridation, and it's being brought by a number of plaintiffs, including a nonprofit group called the Fluoride Action Network, FAN is their acronym, and they have a very good attorney named Michael Connett, who C-O-N-N-E-T-T, who brought this lawsuit for them in the Federal District Court of San Francisco. And it's been delayed a few times for various reasons, including the pandemic, but now it's set for trial in on June 8th, coming up in a little over a month from now, and it will occur. And the legal basis for it, for stopping water fluoridation and all over the country, is, and they're suing the EPA, I should say, the Environmental Protection Agency, for not cracking down on fluoride because it's a pollutant and it's getting put into the water that goes everywhere. And the legal argument will be based on the fact that fluoride is a neurotoxin, much like lead is. We don't mandate that lead be added to the drinking water or that arsenic be added to the drinking water. Well, fluoride as an element is in the realm of the toxicity of lead and arsenic. And it is a neurotoxin, and there's over 100 studies now that show that it does lower the intelligence of children. That is not okay, and it has to stop. And so I am hoping for them all the success in bringing this into federal district court on June 8th, and wait and see how honestly and truthfully this trial is covered by our media. And they should cover this media. They should publicize it, and the American public should be made aware of the arguments that are brought forth, saying this is harming the intelligence of our children and really the entire population, because, you know, we all need to have good brain function in order to be the human beings that we want to be. And this is very harmful to brain function, and this has been known for over 20 years. The science is just more and more overwhelming. So,
you know, when you talk about IQ development, there was a study, long-term study in Canada, that a research team published the results recently that correlated concentrations of fluoride in the urine of pregnant women with the IQ scores 3 to 4 years later of their children. Yeah. The IQs of the boys, but not the girls, in fluoridated communities were, roughly speaking, 1 to 3 points lower than those of boys in non-fluoridated communities.
Right.
So how did you get into this?
Well, you know, the first issue I got into, Don, was mercury, because I had my first amalgam filling placed when I was 40 years old. It was the first filling I ever needed in my whole life. I talked it over with the dentist, who said, well, it's never a problem. Yeah, there's some mercury in there, but it's not a problem. It's fine for everybody. So I just had him put in an amalgam filling, which is 50% mercury, and forgot about it. But I started having some weird health problems, and I had lower energy. I wasn't thinking as clearly, and sometimes I would wake up at night shivering like I had some toxic thing my body was trying to get rid of. I wasn't cold, really. So there were all these little weird things happening to me and my health, and I couldn't figure out why, because I was always eating organic food from the food co-op, and had a good lifestyle, no bad habits, really, and yet something was going haywire with my health. And after a number of months passed, I saw, by chance, an article in a magazine in North Country Co-op, which no longer exists, but that co-op had an article mentioned that mercury can produce fungal overgrowths in a person's body, like in the gut, causing indigestion and bloating and so on, and Candida albicans, the fungal problem. So I said, I don't know what it is. I have to buy this magazine. I have to read this over. I got home and I started reading it, and it hit me like a bolt of lightning that my problems started after I got this first amalgam mercury filling. And my life changed, and it has never been the same since then. That was 1985, so 35 years ago. And today, I'm one of the best-known educators on dental mercury in the United States. That has been my work full-time for the last 20 years, and education on fluoride and the other dental health issues has been part of my work. I have helped many, many thousands of people. I've written many articles. I've done a lot of research, and I hope to continue doing my work for a number of years into the future. It's very important, and, you know, we are fighting misinformation and cover-ups in this area. So a lot of people cannot believe that in the areas affecting our health, that our governmental agencies and powerful groups like the ADA would be lying to us and deceiving us. But unfortunately, that's true. And so it isn't just in the environmental area or, commercial areas that there's corruption. There is corruption in the health arena, unfortunately, and there's a lot at stake for ourselves and for our country in learning the truth and making better decisions about our health.
Well, Leo Cashman, I want to thank you very much for being here today on Northern Sun News. Leo Cashman has been, as he said, 20 years on that.
I can help you find a holistic dentist. I can and do use a holistic dentist. If you're going to get those amalgam fillings removed, it has to be done safely.
Thank you very much. This has been the Northern Sun Radio News Show with your host, Don Olson, every Thursday at 1 o'clock on your community radio station, KFAI, 90.3 FM, HD Minneapolis, and on the web at kfai.org, Radio Without Boundaries.
dot, dot, dot.